Several weeks ago, when Rosalie asked me to lead worship this Sunday, I realized that it would be February. And as a would-be minister, I realized that February is when ministerial search is going into high gear. For some reason, that made me think of a Sunday 4 years ago at my home congregation, the UUCF. It was late June, and Julie Price was the summer minister, so she was leading worship, and I was part of that service as well. It was a very strange Sunday, though. The previous Sunday, Mary Catherine Morn, who had been our minister for 9 years, preached her last sermon there. She was much loved, and so there was going to be a lot of grief present. And to make matters worse, our choir director, Mark Vogel, had recently left. Again, he was much loved, had been there for a long time, but a significant other got a job in Texas, and he had left, I think, in April. But that's not all. As part of a capital campaign project, we had decided to repave our parking lot. And for the summer, we were not going to be on our campus. And this Sunday I'm talking about was the first Sunday we weren't going to be there. And instead, we were worshiping in a school auditorium down the street. So, let me recap. Senior minister, gone. Choir director, gone. Building, inaccessible. That morning, as I was getting ready for worship, I kind of wondered who was actually going to show up, because it really seemed like just too much to deal with. But the amazing thing was, everyone showed up. It was so beautiful. That auditorium was full. Now, it was a weird Sunday because this was our first time in that space. And there was a lot of time in the morning with people kind of bumping around, bumping into each other, trying to figure out where things were. It certainly was not an ideal location. But people did not grumble. Instead, they worked together to figure things out. And yes, many people were sad about all the changes, but they didn't withdraw. They were there for each other, and they were there for those of us leading worship. It turned out to be a beautiful experience. It was as if the strangeness of it all, the strangeness of so much loss at one time, basically gave us permission to just let go of our expectations, just to take things in stride, even to feel a sense of gratitude about being there together. It's that shift that I want to talk about today, not about the gratitude. It's deeper than that. It's about that idea of letting go of expectations. Letting go of expectations which can change how we experience the world, which can change how we see the world, and which, yes, can make gratitude possible. It's that mindset that recognizes that we are all doing the best we can, that we're all offering the world the best we got, working with whatever life has given us. Everything we do is a form of offering. It's all offering. I actually first kind of arrived at this idea that it's all offering on my own journey to the ministry. It was 2011. I'd been serving summer minister at UCF, and I was also preparing to see my first UUA committee called the RSCC. It doesn't exist anymore, but at the time, the RSCC was sort of the first stop for people who wanted to be candidates for the ministry. You know, you met with them, you had a psych evaluation, you filled out all sorts of paperwork, and then you met with them, and they really were just kind of doing that first assessment and talking about where you needed to grow, etc. And like everyone going through the process, I was really nervous. But I was especially nervous because I couldn't help but be conscious of my shortcomings as a would-be minister. You know, I had this image in my mind of what a perfect minister was. let's see, a perfect minister or someone who's a perfect conversationalist, you know, so can really work the coffee hour. Someone who just has, someone who has kind of a warm and easy manner, perfectly centered, always does things right. So that in my mind was a perfect minister. And I was so conscious of the fact that, wow, I don't fit that image. That's not what I am. And as the closer I got to that RSCC meeting, the more concerned I became about this. But you know, then there was a point about a month or two before the meeting when I had an epiphany. And it's partly out of desperation, but it was an honest epiphany. I realized that I would never be that perfect minister. I would never be that perfect minister. And here's the important part. If I tried to pretend that I was, or if I tried to pretend that I could be, then I couldn't minister authentically because it wouldn't be me. I had to work with what I had, with who I was. I had nothing else to offer. So that was the commitment I made, to bring my full self to the ministry, nothing more and nothing less. I called it my ministry of imperfection, and I actually told RSCC about it, because I remember them asking me, you know, a question. I'm like, yes, my ministry of imperfection, I got nothing. Now, of course, realistically, there are attributes that make some people more effective ministers, and there are skills that we need to learn to be effective ministers. All of this is true. But it's also true that when a minister stands up here, when we stand up here, all we have to offer is ourselves. All we can do is make our best effort and let it go. It's all offering. Do you see what I mean? So here's what I wonder. What would it be like to take this idea seriously? What would it be like if we saw our own lives and the lives of others through this idea of offering? I can tell you this. When I embraced my ministry of imperfection, it felt very freeing. It wasn't that I forgot my shortcomings. It wasn't that I gave up on improving my skills to be a better minister. You know, all of that was still true. But I learned not to fight against myself so much, not to argue with reality. That's a phrase from the Buddhists. You know, don't argue with reality. And actually, there's a Buddhist teacher named Ajahn Sumedho. And his primary teaching is about seeing things as they are, about learning to say, it's like this. That's his phrase, it's like this. For example, I'm having a bad day at work. It's easy to focus on why I'm having a bad day, bless you, to get caught up in that kind of internal narration, you know, to hear that inner voice that's talking about everything that's gone wrong with the day. That is so easy to do. But when I do that, what happens? I feel even more miserable. You know, it's just a way of just kind of keep stirring it up. You know, actually, neuroscientists will say that when you have an emotional reaction to something, the emotion itself lasts for something like, I think it's like 10 seconds, 10, 15 seconds. It only perpetuates when you keep talking to yourself about it. It's that internal narration. Another option is to say, it's like this. Work is like this. There's good days, there's bad days. Sometimes it's just awful. A bad day is like this. It's like, yeah, this is a bad day. This practice of saying it's like this is a way of just sort of acknowledging what's real and just stopping that internal narration that keeps it going. Because when we do that, it's like we get knocked on the chin by life, and then out of frustration, we knock ourselves on the chin. Right? It's like this. Now, this is a difficult spiritual practice, and I suspect, you know, that we all have this tendency to narrate our lives, especially when things aren't going well. We all have this tendency to think about how things aren't measuring up, about how other people aren't measuring up, acting the way we think they should, how we ourselves aren't measuring up. What happens if we stop measuring things up and make room for grace? Now, when I say grace, I want to be clear. I'm not talking about any formal theological concept, not like what I studied in seminary. And I went to a United Methodist seminary, and United Methodists are very serious about grace. There's five forms of grace, and it's very complicated. But when I talk about grace, I'm talking about that relaxing of expectations, that relaxing of demands. And this isn't about giving up. It's not about being passive. It's about seeing things clearly for what they are and then deciding how to respond. It's about saying it's like this. Now, I think this can be especially difficult when we're dealing with people, when we're dealing with our partners, dealing with our friends, dealing with people at work. You know, we're such complex creatures. We are so complex. We're capable of doing good things. We can achieve admirable goals. We can act with kindness and compassion. We can act with wisdom, all those things I talk about in my meditation. And yet, inevitably, we let each other down. We let ourselves down. We fall short of our goals. We fall short of ideals. We act and speak thoughtlessly and so on and so on. It's easy to get frustrated and to become cynical. But if we can recognize our inherent complexity, if we can accept our inherent complexity, if we can say that being human is like this, then I think we will find that it's easier for our hearts to be open and filled with love. That's what I mean by grace. I actually learned about this in part from my cats. Albert mentioned we have two cats, and if you're friends on Facebook with me, you know about my cats, because I do these conversations with my cats I report on. So we have two cats. One is named Kitty Fish, and the other is named Belle, and these are both cats we got from rescue organizations. They came with their names, and they seemed to fit, so, you know, we let them be. Now, but these two cats are very different cats. Kitty Fish is a very open and loving cat. She's curious. When someone walks in the door, she's like, oh, are you a friend? And, you know, it doesn't take long before she's rubbing against their leg, and if they sit down, it's like, oh, a lap. I'm so happy. And she jumps on the lap. So that's Kitty Fish. Belle is different. We don't know what happened to her in the past, but she is a very fearful cat. I actually call her our trauma kitty. She is alarmed by sudden movement. If you speak too loud, basically anything unpredictable, she gets very alarmed very quickly. And as we discovered, she has very strict rules about how you can give her attention and where you can give attention to her. You know, you can give it to her when she's sitting on top of the small couch or on the cat condo. But if she's on the floor, back up. And so it was when we first had them, it was very aggravating because we wanted to love her, but we couldn't. And actually, so one of the conversations I wrote about my cats, my first one with Belle, I think, was, so it's always a dialogue. And the cat always speaks first, I speak second, then the cat. So Belle says, don't pick me up, don't pick me up. And I say, Belle, I'm just trying to show you I love you. Not like that. That's Belle. But here's the thing. Over time, we began to learn how Belle thinks. We began to learn kind of what her rules were and to abide by them. She trained us. But what we discovered is when we actually were willing to go along with her rules, to just let Belle be herself. She turned out to be a very loving cat. And not only that, but when we continued to work with her and continue to kind of learn her rules as they evolved, her love just multiplied and she became an even more loving cat. The more we let go of our expectations, the more loving she became. And I think that same idea holds true when we deal with one another. When we extend grace to one another, when we ease up on our expectations, when we ease up on our demands and our discontents, we are in a better position to appreciate what's really there, to see the gifts that we can offer one another. That doesn't mean there won't be friction. That doesn't mean that there won't be frustrations and disappointments. Relationships are like that. But to understand that it's all offering, is to open up our hearts to the blessings that are present as well. And when we do that, those blessings, that love tends to grow, just like it did with Belle. This is how we bless one another's lives. Whether in friendship, a committed relationship, at work, or in community, by accepting one another, by seeing one another with eyes of love, we help one another to bring forth our gifts, to bring forth our love. It's like that Sunday at UCF 4 years ago. Given all the changes, given all the grief, given the fact that we're sitting in a very uncomfortable school auditorium, that service could have been a sad affair. But it wasn't. It seemed that everyone showed up with their hearts open, open to whatever blessings were present in that space. And as a result, the blessings seemed to multiply. And it was all offering. Speaking of change, I know that the coming months here might be unsettling. It's not easy to go through so many changes, to deal with so much uncertainty. It's not easy to get to know a new minister, to build that new relationship. There's no shortcut to doing that. It takes time. It takes patience. But I want to offer you this blessing. May you approach this transition with an open heart. May your eyes be open to the gifts that your new minister brings. And may you receive that person with a loving grace that enables those gifts to multiply. And may you be blessed in return. May that person help you bring forth your own gifts. May you feel seen and accepted and loved. And may your love multiply. May it be so.